Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hang on to your balls. It's time for the Horror Hangout Podcast.
Welcome to the Horror Hangout, a podcast where two bearded film fans watch the 50 best horror movies ever and then talk about them. My name is Luke Condor with a K, and I'm joined by my regular co-host,
Mr. Ben Errington.
How's it going, Ben? You alright?
It's going good, man. How's it going with you?
Not too bad. What are you drinking? You got any beverages on the go?
I've got a bottle of water here, but I have also got a bottle of red wine just in
right
grab shot. But I don't know if I'm gonna crack that open on a Sunday evening. To be fair, I don't know if it's a good idea.
Yeah, are you know, if you have like one glass of red wine a day, it's meant to be healthy for you.
Is that true?
Yeah, but I can never just have one glass because then you can have a half open bottle in the fridge or something.
You can only ever have one jug full of red wine.
It's all or nothing for me. Yeah.
It's all or nothing, yeah. So basically, if I crack this open, shall I just down the whole shebang? I might just save it for a special occasion. Not to say spending time with you is not a good occasion.
Save it for the like the last of the 50 when we do, what is number one? The Shining or something?
Possibly. Spoiler alert! Someone might be listening to this podcast thinking, I can't wait to find out what number one's going to be. Bang. Don't matter.
I can't remember what it is. Okay, have you done any guffs this week?
have I done any guffs? It is such a personal question, isn't it? So I haven't really watched too much in the way of horror apart from today's film, but I did watch some accompanying films for this film, Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
So I watched the rest of the Cornetto trilogy, the Blood and Ice Cream trilogy, so Hot Fuzz and The World's End, in that order. You know, got to do it in the right order.
Yeah. Well, I watched World's End today. Actually, last night, half last night and half this morning.
Ah, right, okay. Did you watch Hot Fuzz as well?
No, I haven't got it, and I couldn't find it streaming anywhere. But I want to watch it again at some point soon.
Yeah, because The World's End on Netflix, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But I've seen Hot Fuzz, like, maybe even more than Shaun of the Dead, because it used to come on all the time, on, like, Channel 4 and stuff.
Yeah. It's another one of those films where you can kind of pick it up from any point and watch it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like I don't necessarily feel that way about Shaun of the Dead. I feel like it's one I've got to watch from sort of start to finish because The World's End, I swear I've only ever seen once, maybe twice before.
How do you feel about World's End? Because when I watched it today, I was like, it's a good film. It just doesn't really hold a candle to the first two.
I don't think it does, no. I think it's like, it's good, it's enjoyable. Obviously, it's good to see a lot of familiar faces from both of those films. But yeah, it does. I don't think it holds a candle to either of them. It doesn't. Yeah. The thing is, because what Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz are is that they're not spoofs, but they do send up various genres and they take a lot from various genres of films and various directors.
Yeah.
But The World's End is entirely its own beast, so it's almost like it doesn't quite feel like
it's almost too polished, but I don't know if that's true because the first two I feel like have more robust structures and stories, and the foreshadowing and the jokes is better. But the World's End seems more, I think it's budget. I think it might be there's more money there or something. I don't know.
Yeah, it seems a lot shinier.
Yeah.
It seems a lot shinier, and it kind of like, it doesn't, the jokes don't fall, so with me, like I find myself crying with laughter, like Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Just a light chuckle, you know? I mean, it's still funny.
Yeah.
But maybe it's because the roles are kind of reversed for Simon Pegg and Nick Frost in that film.
I think Simon plays an incredible straight man.
Like, yeah, exactly. He does.
Probably as gay as well. I don't know.
yeah. I think Nick Frost does as well. He really does. I think they both do. But I think because of what we've come to expect out of both of these films, it just feels a little bit disjointed. Feels a bit like unbalanced, I guess.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've seen them, and I did manage to see Solo. So the Star Wars prequel thing. Have you seen that? Did you see that this week?
No, I don't think I'm going to bother.
No.
No, I don't think so. I'd rather save the money and go watch Hereditary later. And
you'd rather save
it. That's out.
Yeah. Oh, right, okay. You'd rather go and save your money and just have a lovely six pack of Magnums.
A bottle of red. Yeah,
delicious. Actually, bottle of red. You've got wine on the brain today, Jesus.
Magnum Blanco and a bottle of red. That sounds good.
All right.
Yeah.
So I thought Solo was fine. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it for what it was. I think. I mean, I'm not like the biggest Star Wars fan anyway. I'm not like a diehard Star Wars fan, so I kind of appreciate it for what it was. There were a lot of like silly kind of bits that were kind of felt a bit forced in there. Answers to questions that perhaps nobody wants to know the answer to, or nobody cares about. But it's like a sort of action-packed sort of like space adventure movie. I thought it was just great.
Good.
Fine. Great. I don't know. Maybe not great, but maybe good. And everyone involved. I think like the lead actor who was playing what's his name, Alden Reich.
Yeah.
Alden Ehrenreich.
Alderaan.
I mean, he was good, but at the same time, you kind of forget that he's supposed to be Han Solo.
Right.
It's only now and again you go, oh, yeah, he's Han Solo. Oh, yeah, he's Han Solo.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, the supporting cast are all good.
See, I out of the new films, I hold the unpopular opinion that Rogue One is the best one. And I know a lot of people don't agree with me, but I was reading an article about how a lot of franchise films aren't really proper stories because they don't have fully fleshed character arcs in them because they're part of a bigger universe. But Rogue One's the only one that had introduced us to characters, played them through their entire character arcs, had this redemptive tale, and then finished their story in one film. And I feel like that's something that we don't really get in any franchise films anymore. They're more like soap operas than like episodes rather than...
It's because obviously Rogue One was unique in that the way it ended... Something needed to happen to set up the next film, and certain characters needed to be not around anymore because otherwise, like, what the hell?
Yeah.
So obviously, films like Solo are kind of like setting things up, and then there's talk of like a Lando Calrissian spin-off now, and it's almost like characters that are even slightly popular. It's like, oh, how about we find out what happened to this person like 10 years ago, or what about if Chewbacca was around, but like he's an elderly man. And what about it? It's just all a bit.
Yeah, I'll give it a go, especially when it comes on streaming or something, but I'm just a little bit like, I don't know, just a bit burned out on like these big franchise films at the minute.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It has been an intense few weeks, and then obviously we've got Jurassic World this week as well, which I'll probably go and see. So it's been like blockbuster season, big time. And it is, and I admit, it does get a bit exhausting, but
I still kind of
like enjoy the grand scale of all these sort of releases. So
yeah,
you can chill out for a bit after this, I think.
Yeah. So I watched on Netflix as well, there's another, it's weird because I think it was last week when I said I'm not that bothered about zombie films at the minute, but then I watched Return of the Living Dead, which is from the 80s, like super 80s, written and directed by Dan O'Bannon. He wrote Aliens and worked with John Carpenter a bit and stuff like that. Have you seen Return of the Living Dead?
No, I don't think I have.
Okay, it's good. It's I imagine it's done. It did for zombies what Shaun of the Dead did for zombies in 2004, whatever it was. I feel like Return of the Living Dead did for zombies that in the 80s. So it's super 80s, super funny, like ludicrous about these sort of punks working in a morgue. And the zombies talk in it.
All right.
And there's almost kind of Evil Dead-ish in the sort of ludicrous way they sort of chat and they like yearn for brains. And there's a bit where all the people are trapped inside this crematorium, and they send in paramedics to help these guys out, and the zombies get on them, and then the zombie gets on the blower and says, "Send more paramedics," and they just keep like,
right, yeah,
it's really funny. I definitely recommend it. I don't know many people from our generation who are sort of big fans of it, but I think if you were like in your 18 to 30s in the 80s,
yeah,
this would have been one of your favorite films, I imagine, because
I don't think I've ever seen it.
It's on Netflix at the minute. Yeah,
but it's on Netflix. Yeah. All right, okay, cool.
That and also, speaking of zombies, I know I've told you about this many times already, but I've been playing Resident Evil 7, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Speaking of zombies, that there are no zombies in this damn game. Well,
yeah, well, there isn't, is there? But Resident Evil 7 still, Resident Evil, the franchise, still makes me think of zombies.
Oh,
but,
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, this game is so scary. It's really, it balances, just on that cusp of being too scary to play, but it's also incredibly compelling because you want to know what the story is and what's happened to this family, and it just keeps you sort of pulled along. I think if people out there are sort of chasing the dragon and like they want to get scared how they were as a kid, then, and they don't play many horror games, this is the way to do it.
Yeah, like it's pretty intense. It's kind of relentless in how intense it is, because you kind of think, oh, I've got a moment of respite. There's a moment where I can just chill and just gather my thoughts, and then, oh God, no, I've got to run.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that. But yeah, it's a great game, and it's so immersive, I think.
Yeah. I'd like to try it in VR, but I don't think I could hack it.
I don't think I could do it in VR. I think I would definitely urinate myself.
Yeah. And and also watch World's End, like I mentioned before, but... I need to try and get I might get Hot Fuzz on Blu-ray or something, because that is good. And you were like sending me like little quips from it and gifts and stuff, and I was like, it is pretty genius.
There's so many bits that like I've seen it so many times, but it's just a gift that keeps on giving. You just so many lines that I forget, and so many moments that I forget, and there's just so many great actors in it, and you kind of forget that these people were in it, even if they had like sort of really minor roles.
Yeah.
Even like Martin Freeman, Steve Coogan, Bill Nye, they're all in it like very early on. And it's
Peter Jackson's in it.
Peter Jackson, yeah. Peter Jackson is like...
Kate Blanchett as well.
Yeah.
Yeah,
never knew who that was. I never knew who that was for a long time. I thought it was just a sort of... But yeah, Kate Blanchett.
Oh, is that the joke? Cool. When's your birthday? 22nd of January. What year? Every year.
Every year.
Yeah, it's good.
It's good.
Cool. Okay, let's move on to the film we're talking about today. Sean, this is number 7 on the list, I think.
Is it number 6?
Seven, Evil Dead 2.
Number 7, okay.
Six,
I got you.
I believe.
Stand corrected.
Shaun of the Dead. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
Shaun of the Dead, sure. So it's a 2004 comedy horror film directed by Edgar Wright and written by Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg, starring Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. So Pegg plays Sean, a directionless Londoner who was caught in an apocalyptic zombie uprising. There we go. That's pretty much it, isn't it? So
this is what Empire had to say. You can argue until you're zombified with exhaustion as to whether Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg's first cinematic collaboration is a true horror. It is. The laughs are balanced by a keen understanding of the fear aesthetic, and it doesn't skimp either the scares or the gore. You only have to look at Night of the Living Dead, homaging Final Seas to understand that. Plus, Wright and his cast add such real emotional depth to the characters that they come across as more nuanced than in many a scary movie can boast. It's got 92% on Rotten Tomatoes, 8 out of 10 on IMDb. And I put it on the Horror Hangout Facebook group, and everyone, I think just because our group is mainly people of our generation, so everyone had like good things to say about it.
Yeah.
Johnny Swinnow says, it's great fun and a very British homage to the zombie flick. Michael Mayunda says, an absolute classic, probably still stands as Edgar Wright's best film, definitely belongs in the top 10 best horrors. The film does well to be a good homage to the best zombie film, but also does its own thing. And best use of someone, Don't Stop Me Now, in a movie ever. Andy Conduit Turner says, increasingly imitated, but not yet surpassed. It's a film that I can still enjoy today after repeated viewings. And only just lose its crown for favourite Cornetto Trilogy movie to Hot Fuzz. So I think I'm starting to go more that way now. But Hot Fuzz has always held the crown, but it is Hot Fuzz. Maybe after this next rewatch, it'll swap places. I don't know.
Yeah, I think from watching Hot Fuzz again, I think Hot Fuzz does kind of just kind of get the crown for being the best of out of this trilogy for me.
Yeah.
Even though this film is great.
Yeah.
It kind of just sort of wins out for me.
Johan Chipotle says, personally, whenever I think of horror comedy, this is what pops into my head. John Connolly says, it's an absolute gem of a movie. Just as good as a movie as it is a comedy, and that's an incredible achievement. As far as the Cornetto trilogy goes, though, Sean doesn't quite hit the pitch-perfect notes of Hot Fuzz for me, but really, that's like trying to decide which is better, boobs or butts. What's the point? They're both fantastic. when was the last time you watched that?
Before this time?
Yeah.
It's been quite a few years. Again, it was one of those films I used to watch really quite regularly when I used to sort of. It was one of the first Blu-rays I had, I think.
Yeah.
And I used to watch it sort of quite a lot, and it always pop up on like ITV2. So you just sort of like always drop in and out and watch little bits and bobs. But yeah. Probably a couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years since I last saw it. But yeah, it's good when you go away from a film for that long, because when you come back, it does feel incredibly fresh, especially something like this.
Yeah, I think it's same for me. I think I went through a period of watching it. I was 16 or something. And we had the DVD, we used to put it on. And I remember the first time I watched it and thought, there's something special about this that I've not seen before. Like the way that, I didn't realise at the time, but it's the way the camera moved and like the actual visual comedy, phones coming out into camera and like wiggling in. Like,
yeah.
So many little brilliant things like that you just don't get. And it's like, go on.
It's all very spaced. Like, so obviously if you're familiar with Spaced,
then
it's all these little quirks that you kind of recognise from that show. And it pays homage, obviously, to absolutely loads of stuff. But yeah, it's a good point that it is just as good a horror film as it is a comedy.
Yeah.
Because it, as I mentioned before, it doesn't send up, it's not a spoof of a zombie film. It's obviously clearly made by people who are huge fans of the genre, in particular, obviously, like George Romero.
And it's incredibly, the Empire guys are saying, incredibly emotional. Like the emotional depth, when Simon Pegg is crying in this, it's really heartfelt. I feel like this film is the best showreel for an actor you could like ever ask for. It's incredibly funny. The comic timing of Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
He's like one of the best physical comedy actors I think we've had for years. Since like Rick Mayall, and people who can just sort of bang their head like really naturally and trip over. The way you can sort of like just look around like sheepishly, or there's a bit in this I didn't really pick on before, where he's eating pork scratchings and he's only crunching every time there's a gap in the conversation, so just to sort of not like crunch over someone, but he's just like an incredibly great actor. And then there's like when his mother dies later on and those sort of bits. I'm just like blown away by how good of an actor he is.
And he kind of translates that though, I think, across all three of the films, so Hot Fuzz and World's End as well. He does really well in sort of all across the board, a huge range.
Yeah.
But I think Nick Frost is just as good as him, really. Like he just plays, he does sort of play an absolute moron, essentially.
Yeah.
And he's like the source of the most frustrations of the film. But this is like got to be my favorite role of his.
Yeah. I'm trying to out of all of them. Yeah, I think this is my favorite Nick Frost role. Hot Fuzz is pretty good in that as well. Played a very similar sort of character in Hot Fuzz, but
he sure, yeah, he does. But like, just with a bit more of a heart in the right place sort of guy.
Yeah,
in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah. So trying to think what else. So this is the first time I've seen it in about 3 or 4 years. Last time I watched it, I was trying to get Kat into, because she didn't like Simon Pegg, and I was like, how can you not like Simon Pegg? Like, it's such like the British sort of everyman. And I made her watch this, and she's like, yeah, it's quite good. And then we watched Space.
It's quite good.
And now we watch Space like once a year or so, because it's just one of the best sitcoms of all time.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's weird because after this and after sort of The World's End and Hot Fuzz, Simon Pegg for me has not been someone that I've always been massively keen on, which is strange. Just every role he seems to like pick up on, that not one role would stand out to me massively other than this. Now, even though when I'm thinking about what sort of the stuff he's sort of been in since, anything where he's like the leading man has been kind of a flop, without being too harsh.
What do you think to Run, Fat Boy, Run?
I didn't necessarily like that too much.
I've
only seen it once.
It's not perfect, but I mean, it does have some great Simon Pegg-isms. But you are right, I'm the same. Like, I don't think really follow his career.
And any film he's like got a minor role in, so obviously like Mission Impossible, I can't even think of what else he's in. He was in Ready Player One. I don't know. It's strange that he hasn't sort of returned to this sort of role or this sort of genre.
Yeah.
Well, not necessarily genre, but doing something a bit different. I guess obviously Edgar Wright's kind of moved on in terms of the films he's making now. But it would be good to see come back and make a sort of another quintessentially British.
It's weird that even Edgar Wright, like, I do love Edgar Wright's films. I don't love any of the new ones anywhere near as much as I do Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead.
No. I mean, I Scott Pilgrim versus the World, I enjoyed, but I think it's those big studio films that he makes that don't necessarily have his stamp on as such. Or maybe a stamp.
Do you lose the English flavour?
Yeah, maybe his stamp has just changed, or maybe when he's making a film with an American cast, it's just a little bit different, which is fine. But yeah, this is the essential Edgar Wright, I'd say.
And Nick Frost, what is he doing these days? I think he does a few blockbusters here and there, doesn't he?
Yeah, so he's in Tomb Raider as a very sort of minor part in that, and I think he's just doing some TV and stuff.
Yeah.
I haven't seen him in sort of a major role for a while.
Yeah, it's strange. So in the film, we mentioned already, but key players have got, I think we have to say, Edgar Wright is a key player in this film. His directorial like style is so much a part of the tone and it's so much a part of the film itself. It's difficult to not include him in the key player in this. But we've got Simon Pegg playing Sean. Kate Ashfield plays his long-term girlfriend, Liz. Nick Frost plays Simon Pegg's drug-dealing layabout housemate, Ed.
Housemate / like sort of old friend that he's kind of obviously kept around.
He's kind of holding him back from growing up properly, really. We've also got Peter Serafinowicz in like one of his earlier roles. That he sort of, after this Peter Serafinowicz didn't do too much American stuff, or too many movies. And then recently he's now like, he's the Tick and he's in Guardians of the Galaxy and all these things. But Peter Serafinowicz is another one who's like a massive talent. Like, look, all the things he's done, Look Around You, the Peter Serafinowicz Show.
Yeah.
So many like great.
He's the voice of Darth Maul, wasn't he?
Voice of Darth Maul, yeah.
Which is pretty cool. bit strange, but
Lucy Davis is in it. She plays Diane. People might know her from The Office, the UK one. She plays what's her name in The Office?
Dawn.
Dawn, yeah. Dylan Moran. He plays this is the only time I think we've ever seen Dylan Moran not play Dylan Moran.
Yeah.
And he did it really well. Like, I always felt like Dylan Moran is such a unique person. I didn't know if he could do anything else. But in this, he's completely different, and he's like amazing in it.
Essentially, this film, in either minor roles or like cameos or major roles, it is basically the who's who of British comedy royalty from like the late 90s through to the mid 2000s. Essentially, there's like everyone is kind of there. I mean, there are a few people missing, like from Space that I noticed weren't in it. I mean, you don't get any Bill Bailey.
Heap. Mark Heap. I don't know why he's not like a household name. That guy is so funny. Like,
he's just. Oh, sorry. I laughed so much because I just saw his face and remembered. He's great as well.
If anybody's watched Space, he plays Brian, the artist, and he was in that. He was in Jam, the Chris Morris show. He used to pop up in little English comedy TV shows like that, and then in Green Wing, he was a mainstay in that.
Yeah, and now he's in. Isn't he in Friday Night Dinner as well?
I've only seen a couple of those episodes, and he is. Yeah, every time I've seen him pop up, it's always been brilliant.
Like, yeah,
he's such an amazing actor. So it's a shame that we didn't really get him in this. But that's the way it is. So the plot. Should we jump into the story?
Yeah. So the film starts in the local pub, obviously the Winchester, where these guys spent. Hello, there's a nice little sound effect for that. What are you opening? A lovely can of John Smith's
Iron Brew.
Oh, I feel like I had something fizzy now, but I've only got the wine. It's not fizzy. I'll just stick to our water. So yeah, they're in the pub, and all the main players are here pretty much, and we get introduced to Simon Pegg's character Sean, and his girlfriend Liz is kind of giving him a bit of shit about the fact that their lives aren't really going anywhere. They're doing the same things week in, week out. Aren't they bored? But obviously, Sean, and especially like Ed, are kind of like happy in their lives of just this discomfort of just doing the same things week in, week out, just relaxing and having a lovely cold pint in the pub.
Yeah.
Obviously, Liz wants a bit more, which is fair enough. But Sean is obviously unwilling to change too much.
He's stuck in this permanent sort of man-child place. And then we get like a great way of introducing the characters, the main characters and also the side characters.
Yeah.
Some whip hands that Edgar Wright, you see a lot of that kind of stuff.
But, yeah.
And then after we sort of got to the place where they're like, okay, Sean is going to try harder. He's going to try harder to be a proper boyfriend, and they're going to try to make him more of an adult. That's going to be like the main gist of the film. And then we cut to like this like opening credits prologue sequence that is so well put together. It's got like everyone listening, like someone listening to the zombie song, whatever it's called, on the bus.
Yeah.
Is that a bit later on? But it's got all these little ideas like teenagers walking like zombies in the streets and people
doing their jobs like day to day, or sort of walking around zombie.
Yeah.
Like, and then obviously when the actual title appears on screen, there's kind of like just a group of kids kind of walking towards the screen, sort of like not actually the Living Dead, but just
almost that way.
So then we get Sean waking up. This is quite good as well, because obviously we get hit some legs stumbling towards like an open door. And
Simon Pegg and playing a pretty fucking great zombie.
Yeah, but it's just Sean yawning, which is good.
Yeah,
there are loads of moments like this in this film, whereas obviously it's set up as a zombie film, so there are so many tropes that you're familiar with that you're kind of expecting.
Yeah,
and the way this film deals with them a lot of the time is it kind of like either teases the introduction of those tropes, or it introduces that trope but puts like a real unique spin on it.
Yeah.
So you're looking at it from the other direction, which is like really, it is really sort of quite interesting. And that's why if you're a big fan of the zombie genre as well, this film's so enjoyable, because it's everything you're familiar with and everything you see and you've seen before, but just you're just enjoying it in a completely different way.
Yeah, yeah. There's they lay like so many foreshadowed jokes and stuff that'll be like later on in the film. There's a bit, so Sean wakes up. Does he go to the shop? I think he goes to the shop at this point. And we get this shot of just the camera sort of following him as he makes his little journey to the corner shop, which is a very British experience as well. Just pop into the shop. Come on, just from the shop. Cornetto.
Cornetto.
And he passes a homeless guy asking for change. A little kid who kicks a football at his head and says, next time I see you, you're dead.
No, you're dead.
is that what he says?
I think he just goes, I think he says that. I think he says, oi, you're dead, or oi, next time I see you, you're dead, or something like that. Yeah. So he's walking. It's a lovely sort of like pan shot where you see loads of different things happening, loads of people. There's like a guy who's like a sort of road sweeper, like just staring at him.
Yeah. So sort of washing the window or something, and all this stuff that kind of comes back in later on.
I mean, just before that, just before he left for the shop, Peter Serafinovich's character does sort of come and say that Ed needs to find a job, or at least if he's freeloading off them, he needs to essentially tidy up around the house or something. So obviously we start to be introduced a little bit of tension there. I think Pete's like a childhood friend as well, isn't he?
And he's kind of like it, yeah, but he's grown on now. He looks like a banker, or he's doing.
Yeah,
he's getting on with his life.
Yeah, and then Sean, before he sort of leaves, he asks Ed to take down some phone messages, not just your own.
Yeah,
Like,
he comes downstairs and what's his name is playing on a game.
And
he goes, player two has entered the game. Have you got work? Player two has left the game.
so many little
bits.
So then Liz phones and leaves an answering message, which obviously Sean doesn't hear, which says, sorry, I'm a little bit busy tonight, so could we just make the dinner just for 7 instead of 8 or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. And then obviously the message never gets taken.
No. Exactly. So when Sean is in the shop as well, there's another thing that this film does really well. It kind of like gives you a very slight glimpse of the media and the way that they're reporting on these kind of events that have been happening. Obviously,
loads of little things like that, like just things happening around Sean, he's just oblivious to.
Yeah, or he starts reading a newspaper headline at some point, and then obviously the guy working in the shop, slams his hand down on the paper.
Yeah. Also, there's a bit where they're just talking in like military trucks, like just pass by. Like, stuff I've not really noticed before, but.
No, there's a lot of stuff on TVs, like in the background, on the radio. just lots of bits like that, that Sean's kind of, he is oblivious to, but he is kind of paying, he's paying a slight bit of attention to, but he's not paying enough attention to,
yeah,
to realize. So when he's on the bus on the way to work next as well, he's kind of like staring out the window and he sees what looks like someone just like collapses on a bus stop like across the road.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like watching as sort of people gather around.
Yeah. So and then he says, gather around, and he's doing the staff meeting. Like, yeah. So good. Like yeah, the little transition there. Gather around, and then other people gather around a person, and it comes.
Yeah,
to
yeah.
Him. Yeah, it's so good.
Yeah, it's good.
So, and then we're introduced to, he's, the boss has called him sick at work or something, so Sean has to step up as the man, but no one takes him seriously. He's trying to do a bit of a pep talk, but no one's listening. Rafe Spall is in this.
Yeah.
We've seen many times now, The Ritual. Did we do a show on the episode on The Ritual?
No, I don't think we did we?
Probably should have done that, because that's pretty good. But Rafe Spall plays a perfect sort of
just like Saturday boy who just don't care about his job and just yeah, don't take Sean seriously, answering his phone on the job. Can you just not answer your phone, please, yeah, mate?
This is
if you not do personal errands.
Yeah, this is the first time where, and so Sean says to him, look, mate, I know you don't want to be here the rest of your life. I've got things I want to do. And he goes, when? And he goes, how old are you? I'm 29. And I was like, 29? I'm older than Sean now. This is the first time I've watched it and I've like been older than him. He's always been like, I'll be all right when I get to that point. But
now
I'm past that point.
Oh, how do you feel?
Bit
too deep and then we go a bit too deep. Yeah. And I don't know. Things are, oh, God.
Yeah. So he gets the, so he says to Rafe Spall, you know, keep your personal life personal. And they're introduced to his dad. Is that right at this point?
It was Sean's stepdad, isn't it? So Philip, played by Bill Nighy. That's not my dad. Yeah. Your dad's here. It's not my dad.
And this he is says that to customers. He's doing the thing with the customers.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
showing
yeah
them the TV, and he's got the news here, and I don't know what that is. And he's sort of going through the thing, and then I think it's Sean, your dad's there, and he tells the customers, he's not my dad.
He feels
a need to tell everyone that it's not his dad.
Yeah, so he's clearly got a very difficult relationship with him. We're made to. So I think he came into Sean's life when he was, what, about 12 or something like that? 12 something or 13? Like yeah, so they got a bit of a frosty, difficult relationship.
Played amazingly by Bill Nighy, by the way. Like,
yeah.
So spot on.
His stepdad comes to sort of basically say to him, yeah, come around for dinner, and that he should buy her some flowers that he didn't bring around for Mother's Day, was it?
I wasn't going to. Yeah, make sure you don't bring us a little posy from the petrol station. I wasn't gonna.
Yeah. And then after that meeting, he has a few words of Rafe Spall's character, who says, like, I thought you said keep your personal life out of work. He was like, I did. That wasn't actually, that was a, what was it he says? He says
that. I don't know, very important.
Yeah, it was an emergency.
What, and then like, get your mum some flowers.
Yeah. And then suddenly,
Sean, phone for you.
Phones on the phone, comes through, and it's Liz. But obviously, because Sean's embarrassed, he's not actually listening.
Yeah.
He's completely ignoring her, going, oh, is it okay about the restaurant tonight? Can we book it? She's like, yep.
doing that and Rafe Spall's like, just give it. This episode might just go to us, like, goofing about the funny bits in the film, but it's just so good. So Sean obviously misses the whole point of the phone call anyway. This is the second chance to. So he missed the message because of his housemate, who hasn't sort of sorted out. He didn't really listen to this call because he's trying to be, trying to prove a point, I guess. And then what happens now? So he goes back to work, or he goes back home, right?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So no, he goes to buy some flowers. While he's buying the flowers, he sees like a homeless man opposite, like what looks like he's about to eat a pigeon, and then he just disappears behind the bus as it sort of drives by, which was pretty funny. And as he's walking there, he meets so it's like his ex girlfriend or like an old flame. So Yvonne, played by Jessica Hines, obviously from
it's a nice little callback to Spaced, isn't it?
Lovely call back to Spaced, yeah. And that is when he's chatting to her, that is when he remembers booking a table.
Yeah. So when is he doing anything special? Yeah.
Just
remembering that he had to do something. Oh, yeah. And then we get the hip-hop montages that like Edgar Wright does so well, with the things from Snatch where
little
snippets of stuff.
Yeah, just looking for the telephone number for the restaurant.
Yeah.
And then he calls one restaurant and it's fully booked. And you think, you try and book somewhere else or just go somewhere where you don't need to book. But he just rings Liz and says, I forgot about it all. I've mugged myself right off. How about we go to the Winchester?
Yeah.
puts the phone down on him.
Yeah.
So then he grabs the flowers that he bought for his mum and then he goes to Liz's flat, like essentially to try and apologize or make amends. And this is when we sort of see the full relationship between him and her, but also with her flatmates who.
Yeah.
Dylan Moran's character doesn't like Sean for whatever, thinks he's a bit of a layabout waster. Lucy Davis's character is supposed to be in a relationship with Dylan Moran, right?
They're a couple, yeah. But obviously not really that meant to be together or anything. We get the impression that Dylan Moran's character likes Liz, Sean's girlfriend. But so they're having an argument because he's again said, let's go to the Winchester. That's his be-all and all. That's where he always seems to go, the Winchester pub. So he's having an argument and we're looking at Diane and Dylan Moran's character and then what's this bit? So Sean says something about what about your friends or something, and she said, what, a failed actress and a twat? And he's, I did not call Diane a failed actress, just obviously thinks that Dylan Moran's a twat. So he gives her the flowers and she says thanks and he says to a wonderful mum.
He goes, what?
Just a little joke there. I'm trying to remember how it goes from here. I think we just get broken up with. I mean, that's just the point.
She basically just says, this isn't what I want or something. Yeah. She goes, I've got to do something. And then it just cuts to him in the rain, looking devastated.
That reminds me of Space as well. I'm sure that exact same shot happened
in Space. With the door closing in his face.
Yeah.
Then he basically goes to the Winchester with Ed and he's obviously absolutely devastated. There's a wonderful moment where what song comes on the jukebox? If you leave me now. Yeah. Who put this on?
Yes, it's John.
It's random.
Yeah. So then they're boozing like crazy. And he's like, Sean's slowly getting over this being broken up with. And there's another amazing bit where Nick Frost is like, look, mate, I'm not going to tell you there's plenty more fish in the sea. I'm not going to give you all the standard bullshit you normally see. But I tell you what, it's not the end of the fucking world, is it? And then right at that moment, like a zombie knocks on the door outside. It's good.
When they're leaving the pub as well, so they see sort of two people, or it looks like potentially kissing at the side of the thing.
Yeah.
Hello? Did they say get a room or something like that?
Miss your tea, love, or something.
Yeah. And then suddenly it's obviously a zombie eating someone else and the head sort of lolls to one side.
Yeah.
And then obviously we got that zombie staggering towards them. What song is that they're doing?
Well, I think they were doing White Lies at the start and then it becomes some weird thing.
They just think he's drunk, don't they?
Yeah. So they go back to the house. They're playing like music incredibly loud.
Oh my god, this is ridiculous, isn't it? They're just like playing music loud, just like scratching the record and everything.
And then Pete comes downstairs, like he's really angry because like I've got work in the morning. It's 4 in the morning.
It's 4 in the fucking morning. Yeah.
Takes the vinyl record, lobs it out the window.
Yeah, and I like it when he says to Ed at this point. He goes, "Now, can you understand why I'm so fucking angry? Fuck yeah."
Yeah. Pete's been bitten on the hand as well. He said he got mugged. Some woman bit him on the hand. And
why did they bite you?
I don't know. I didn't stop to fucking ask them.
So he said he got a headache, and he's like his hand's been bitten and everything. So, and then as he's going back, he goes, "And the front door is open again." keep leaving the front door open. The thing is, like, everyone knows somebody like that.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Just always leaves the your front door's wide open, is it? Oh right, okay. Yeah.
And then later on, again, that's like an amazing foreshadowing to a joke later on, where they realise there's zombies out there, and then Sean goes, "I'll close the door." shut the door, but finally. So Pete goes to bed, but he has a massive thing at Sean. He says, like, obviously this is like a wake-up call for him, and he says, "You need to sort your fucking life out, mate." And then Sean, he writes his little to-do list, go to get flowers for Mum or something, win back Liz, sort win life out Liz. On his little notebook. Yeah. And he falls asleep, wakes up again.
It's a great shot here, obviously, where he hasn't moved from the night before. Just quickly snaps it to morning, which is lovely. Basically goes for a walk to the corner shop again, which is exactly the same walk as he took in the morning before. But now, instead of all the characters that we saw initially, everyone is essentially a zombie.
Yeah, and it's like where the guy was cleaning the window of his car, that window's now smashed in. There's like so many little things. Like, he trips on the same curb. He thinks the homeless guy is asking for money. It's just homeless stuff.
Yeah, sorry, I ain't got any money. I didn't even have enough for the bloody Cornetto.
And then this is another, I keep gushing about this film, but they go back into the house with the Cornetto, and they're eating, or they're chilling out and watching the TV, and it's the news reports, and they keep channel hopping. And if you sort of follow the sentence that they're making on the channel hopping, it's telling you about the end of the world.
Yeah.
It's
going from the news to like the Smiths, David Attenborough, then some football, and then the news again. But it's basically just like everything. And eventually they do stick on a channel and realize, hang on a minute, there's something weird here.
There's a girl in the garden.
Yeah. And then Ed's just been stood in the corner of the room for this whole thing. He just goes, "There's a girl in the garden."
So
they think there's a teenage girl, like, just absolutely wasted, just like in the garden. And when she turns around, like, with her eyes white, and she looks like, they go, "Oh my God, she's so drunk."
Yeah. There's a bit where she's like coming towards Sean, and she, he just thinks she's coming onto him.
Yeah. So she falls onto him, and then Ed like takes a photo from her like disposable camera as well. She's obviously, at this point, Sean's is laughing, but then he starts to realize, wait a minute, she's actually like trying to bite me. What the hell's going on?
Yeah.
And when he stands up and pushes her away, she falls onto like a sort of, what is it, like a parasol base thing. And it just like goes all the way through her. Which is when our characters realize that something really is up.
Yeah. So then they go back in the house. I think they try and call some people. He tries to call Liz. And then Sean says she's engaged. And Nick Frost says that was quick. And then there's a little thing like that.
Are they still at the window?
Oh, and then the guy, the big fat zombie, walks into the front door.
So obviously there's a male zombie and a female zombie outside in the garden.
Right, yeah.
And when they sit down and they start watching the TV, the zombies are trying to get through the window, but they're not sort of doing too much at this stage. And as they're watching the TV, they start saying that, like, make sure all your windows and doors are sort of closed and fully, which is when they realize the front door was open, and there's a guy in a tuxedo. Well, a guy who's like just come from a wedding or something.
Yeah.
Zombie who just appears. And obviously then that's when they've got to kill the zombies at this point for the first time. So they're throwing just like anything at it, a pillow. This is a great moment, because when it walks in, spatula. Oh my God, he's got an arm off.
Yeah.
He's got an arm off.
I think Nick Frost kills him by, Ed kills him by with the ashtray on his head. And then the news reporter says, the only way to kill them is by destroying the head, removing the head, or destroying the brain.
Yeah, you see his egg go.
Yeah, so they get like a washing basket hamper sort of thing of stuff, spatulas and a toaster, to try and take out the zombies in the back garden. Eventually, they find the CD vinyls the one that Pete chucked out the night before, and that works. I don't want to go into too much detail, but it's just a good scene where they're going through the vinyl records.
Yeah,
and Sean's telling which head, one can or can't.
In my head, I'm thinking records would never work, would they? They'd never work trying to like destroy like a zombie's brain with a record. The best you get is like most of them miss, but one sort of like goes in this guy's eye. But eventually they go into the shed. Sean has a cricket bat. Ed has a shovel, and they beat the zombies to death. Which one do you want, the man or the girl? Which one do you want, the girl or the guy? First one, and they swap over.
And then when they kill these zombies, it's like suddenly gets very brutal. Like we're watching them for quite a while, killing these zombies, bashing them on heads. And then it suddenly cuts to them on the living room sofa eating cornettos and, and relaxing. Or
I would have to sit down.
Yeah. So here we get, they make the plan for what they're going to do. Sean, I think, says, right, we'll go to... they phone his mum first to make sure she's all right. And they find out that Philip, his stepdad, has been bitten. And they're like, okay, we're going to have to go to his mum to pick up his mum. Then we're going to have to go get Liz from her flat. And then they come back to the house. They make all different sorts of plans. Each time they tell the plan, we see it, and we see it getting faster and faster, and like less sort of.
And eventually, like go to the Winchester and wait for all of this to blow. And that's not yet, is it?
So they make the plan. They realize Pete is upstairs. He's a zombie now.
They kind of think maybe he's not there because they call upstairs to him.
Yeah.
And what does Nick say? Oi, prick! What does Ed say? Oi, prick! And he didn't respond. He said, well, he's definitely not there then.
Yeah, yeah.
But as they're about to leave, Sean's like, actually, I need a wee. So he goes upstairs and then sees sort of the shadow of Pete stood in the shower, and then he's a zombie and comes after him. Does he just like lock him in? I think he just like, or like closes the door on him.
I think he might close the door, but somehow he gets that later on anyway. They escape in Pete's car. They drive all the way to Liz's whilst...
They go to mum and dad's house not first, don't they? I think they go to mum's first.
Yeah, you are right. Yeah, they do. Yeah.
And as soon as they get there, Ed's like, "Hang on a minute, Phil's got a Jaguar in the front on the drive."
Yeah, and it's yours.
And he's like, "I'll just wait
because he wants to check me around with a piece of wood, less half a Snickers in the glove box."
Yeah. So Ed's just like, I'll just wait outside, and obviously Sean goes in thinking that he's gonna have to kill Philip, who he's assuming is gonna be a zombie already.
Yeah.
So when he walks up behind him with his cricket bat, he says, "I'm sorry, Philip." He goes, "Why? What have you done this time?"
Yeah. And then it suddenly becomes an incredible dynamic of him just being a dad, like a dad he didn't particularly like. Like he's thrown Sean's toys out. Oh, what? Like he just makes, like all the things that like Sean,
I took them down the tip the other day. Oh, what? Oh, my God's sake!
And then Sean's like, "We have to leave because," and he's like, "Why?" The doctor's come in, and then Bill Nye goes, "Oh, you didn't call the doctor, did you, Barbara? I told you I ran it under a cold tap."
Yeah, that was a good Bill Nye impression. I ran it under a cold tap. And then she's like the classic mum, where she's like, "Do you want anything to eat? Do you want to eat some sandwiches? Cut some bread for me." Yeah, so that's quite good. And obviously, when they do eventually leave, Ed has like crashed Pete's car, obviously on purpose, so that they could take the Jaguar.
Yeah.
But so the zombies crashed attack it again as they're all getting in the car. A zombie like bites Philip in the neck, which is like, you know, he's gone now, but he's still sort of surviving. All of them get in the car. They drive to Liz's.
Yeah.
And then Sean goes in on his own, basically, doesn't he?
Yeah. So he collects. He somehow convinces them all to go with him. Tells them they're going to go to the Winchester.
Because they basically say like, we're someone we're familiar with, we know all the exits, somewhere that's like fortified, got food and drink, obviously got big locks for on the door,
red bolts. I think their flat was a better,
their flat is an absolutely perfect place
for
them to stay, because it's like the second floor or something, isn't it?
So they could just fortify like the balcony bit and then they'd be fine. But
surely they'd be fine anyway, because zombies aren't going to get up there unless you buzz them in.
These aren't climbing zombies, are they? They're pretty lame. Yeah, so they could just stay there. But because Sean's gone there, now there's like zombies like gathering around. But for whatever reason, he managed to convince them to come with him. If anything, it's just a sign of him showing his leadership initiative now. He's starting to grow as a human being. So they leave. They all get into the Jaguar. They're driving like crazy. Yep.
And this is the moment where Sean introduces Liz to his mum for the first time ever, and they're like basically sat on each other's laps.
Yeah, yeah.
Like sat so close to each other. Yeah. Mum, this is Liz. Liz, this is mum. Hello.
They're driving like crazy. Ed's driving, and Ed's like a nutcase, like running people over. Sean, what's his name? Bill Nighy is basically dying now, and he tells Sean it wasn't always easy. Sean, like, he was stepped down. He wanted to be like a role model for him as an adult sort of thing that he didn't think he ever had. And they sort of reconcile it right at the end, just as he dies, and then Sean has another breakdown. A really great emotional part again from Edgar Wright. That's from Simon Pegg, and they pull up, and then he tells Ed, "Not everyone's all right. Mum, Dad's just died," and then she says,
"No, he isn't. Dad, Philip's dead. No, he isn't." And then when they all get out, and Philip's obviously a zombie, Sean says, "There's absolutely nothing left of him. Everything you loved of that man is gone." And then you see Philip reaches over and turns the radio off because it gets so loud.
So now the traps, all the weapons are inside the car. There's loads of zombies sort of piling up. So they go, we have to keep moving. They go around like these, the back of these fences, one of these sort of alleyways, jitties, ginnels, whatever you want to call them.
Jitties.
Yeah. Jitty is the slang I knew growing up. Cat had ginnel in Manchester. What do you have in Bristol?
I don't know. Back alleyway, I guess.
We call them jitty. Take the jitty.
Take the jitty around there. Alleyway, I guess. That's what you call it.
So they go through there, and we come across Jessica Hines' character again, and like the exact same characters, but like an alternative version of them.
Yeah.
Which is like the moment. Yeah.
So you got like, who have you got? Like Matt Lucas, Martin Freeman.
Well, I've got a quiz on you.
Okay, there we go.
So we'll pass over that bit. But Simon Pegg's mum is distracted because she knows one of the houses. Oh, this is where Philip lives, or whatever she says.
This is where like Nigel lives or something. Yeah. I swear it is. And then she ends up in a different garden.
Yeah.
And suddenly Sean hears her scream, so he goes to rescue her. And there's a zombie attacking her, so he kind of like attacks it with one of his swing ball things.
Give it to him, and he goes, "Oh yeah!" So spins around, really going for it like a mace or something. It just
hits a tennis ball. Not working. Rubbish.
Yeah. There's another funny bit as well where just after this bit, they've saved the mum and they call the zombie, and they're like, "Right, across from this fence is the road, and then there's a Winchester. I'll take a look to see if the coast is clear." And he's like a little child set of steps. And he goes up each and every single one.
Yeah.
Looks up. And then he goes back down and he says, "The coast clear." And he goes, "No." "How many are there?" "Lots." And so they decide they're going to have to act like a zombie to get to the Winchester and walk through these masses of zombies there. I think Simon Pegg's the only one who does a decent impression of a zombie.
Yeah. But I guess they kind of make out that everyone else is either like, just not interested, or so Dylan Moran's like, "I'll do it on the night." No, Ed says he'll do it on the night. Yeah, you don't even need to practice.
Yeah,
there's a really this bit made me laugh. Is Sean's mum is doing a weird sort of like, "Ooh," she's not even actually moaning, she's like a zombie. She's just goes, "Ooh." There's a funny bit actually when Diane is sort of teaching them all to behave like zombies, where Sean's mum is kind of like
spacing out,
and he goes, "That's really good, Barbara. Sorry, I wasn't listening."
Yeah, it's good. So then they go for it. They walk through these masses of zombies, and they start pretending, and they get to the Winchester entrance, but it's locked, and now they're trapped out there, and they need to find a way in. Zombies are getting in, like cavern around.
Ed's phone rings,
and he takes the call.
and it's like someone who's obviously asking him if he's got any drugs.
Yeah.
And she goes, "Nah, nothing, mate. What about you?" And it's like they're just carrying on like a normal conversation, even though like the world is ending and there's zombies everywhere.
So Sean finally like bursts with rage at his friend Ed, like screams at him to grow the fuck up. It's a big moment, but now the zombies are, every zombie like nearby has heard them and they're coming towards them. Dylan Moran makes the stupid mistake of breaking a window to get into the pub because now the zombies are just going to follow them in. So Simon Pegg leads them away, makes like a diversion for them to get inside the pub. So now we're at the final. We're at the house, the Night of the Living Dead house. We're at the the base, the final setting of the rest of the film. So what happens now? Where do we go from here?
So we're kind of like in the pub. Obviously, Sean isn't there at this particular moment, and everyone, they're sort of like looking around. They sort of block up the shattered window. They kind of just pile things up, don't they?
Yeah.
And then Sean does eventually make it back. He said, I slipped in through the, I came through the back door and after I gave him the slip.
Yeah.
I think everyone sort of knows at this point. Did he? What did he do? How has he done this? And at nighttime, sort of the six of them are sort of all hanging around in the pub. And then Sean goes into the back room to sort of like turn on the main circuit breaker. So they've got electricity, which I was a bit like, why are they doing that? Like to watch the TV or? To turn the TV on, see if there's any sort of broadcast.
Right, yeah, yeah.
And when he switches the lights on, he sees that the zombies have all followed him and they're at the back door of the pub. So he just pulls the blind down just so you don't have to look at them.
Yeah.
So basically all the TV channels are all broadcasting like the stay tuned for more information screens, yeah. aren't they? Or keep, so obviously things really have hit the, shit really has hit the fan at this particular stage because there were broadcasts before, but now there's nothing at all.
Yeah. Ed, while this is happening, they're sort of getting used to their accommodation and they're having a drink and eating crisps and stuff. Ed says, Liz, have you got a quid?
Yeah.
And she gives him a pound coin for him to spend on the slot machine. And it's like super loud.
Loud and he lays like, the jackpot, all the money's coming out. It's like, you fucking idiot.
Yeah.
And that's when the pub landlord sort of wakes up from somewhere and comes in. He's a zombie.
Yeah.
The jukebox switches on and like obviously Don't Stop Me Now by Queen's playing while everybody's hitting the zombie with pool cues. In time with the music. But they've all got pretty good at killing zombies at this point. They really take ages to like kill him. Diane joins in, she throws like a dart at the landlord, it just hits Sean in the side of the head.
At the same time they tell Dylan Moran to go and turn the power off and the fuse, and he goes to turn it off and doesn't know which one it is. He starts flicking these switches up and down. So he cut outside the pub and there's really loud music and the lights are coming like blinking in and off.
It's the worst thing any of them could do. And then Ed sort of grabs there's a rifle behind the bar that he's sort of mentioned a few times in the film as like being live. Yeah. And obviously everyone's saying it's obviously deactivated. He's like, nah, the landlord knows some people. He's a dodgy character. So when he throws Sean the gun, Sean like just smashes the zombie into the jukebox, doesn't he? And he says, obviously I didn't shoot him because it's deactivated. And then he just shoots the gun.
Yeah. So now they've got a weapon. Zombies are starting to pour in through the gaps in the wind and stuff. And they're fucking terrible with the gun, really. They miss. I think they hit like two people at the most.
Yeah. Well, they kind of like, they keep just going, you take the gun.
Yeah. At the same time, we realize Sean's mum was bitten earlier in the film. And she's dying now. So Sean gives the gun to Ed and goes to sort of say goodbye to his mum, and that's another like really emotionally heartbreaking bit. And as she dies, we hear the gun cock, and we see that Dylan Moran is now like about to shoot Sean's mum. And we tell it's not just because she's a zombie. There's like a hidden thing there where he's obviously jealous of Sean.
Yeah,
and Liz's relationship. He's jealous of Sean stepping up to be the sort of leader in this group, and this is him trying to, maybe more subconscious than anything, but he wants to get one up on Sean and he's going to do that by killing his zombie mum. And then does he punch him? Yeah, he punches him.
Yeah, I think he punches him. And then there's like a Mexican standoff bit here where David's got the gun aimed at Sean. Sean's got like, what's he got? Something. And then
broken bottle or something.
Ed gets a corkscrew and then Diane like comes and grabs something as well, so there's this sort of moment. But then Sean eventually sort of like takes the gun because Barbara rises a zombie and he does kill his mummy.
Yeah, but they do. So there's a bit where Sean punches David.
Yeah.
And then he goes to shoot Sean, like he actually pulls the trigger.
Yeah,
the gun.
But
it's empty, so it obviously nothing goes off. But the intention was there to actually kill Sean.
Yeah, yeah.
So then instantly the guy is like embarrassed.
I'm so embarrassed.
He says, I'm gonna leave. I can't be around these people. He goes to leave. And then we have probably the most gruesome death in the entire film.
Yeah. I mean, this is definitely a callback to Dawn of the Dead, isn't it?
Yeah.
Getting ripped apart.
The hands are reaching into the stomach, pulling like intestine out and stuff. It's really well done. And then Diane follows him into the zombies to try and
with one of his severed legs or arms, using it as a weapon into the zombies. Yeah, so that's
so she gets killed.
So I don't think we see her get killed at this stage. Yeah. She kind of just goes off into the crowd, so you know she could have survived.
Yeah, and then we were left with the three: Sean, Liz, and Ed.
All the zombies break into the pub at this point, and obviously including Pete. And Pete and a few of the other zombies like start biting Ed, and that's when Sean says, "I said leave him alone."
Yeah, and he has like a really good headshot.
Yep.
The zombies push them into the cellar, like they sort of work them into it. so we're right at the end of the film now, where Ed's dying. They find that they've got a way up through like the service hatch thing into the main road, but they're probably going to die. And they go up, and then there's like military action have just sort of found the area, right?
Yeah, so military have sort of all sort of come in. They start opening fire on all the zombies, and then we see Yvonne, obviously from earlier, Jessica Hine, says that they're evacuating any survivors. How many of you are left? And obviously Sean and Liz are just like, it's just us. And that is the end of essentially Z-Day, which then we see a lot of TV. Then it's several months later, and we see a lot of TV shows and reports. Yeah. Saying obviously everything that's happened since Z-Day, obviously a lot of life was lost, but now zombies have kind of like been given menial jobs in sort of like retail and restaurants and collected trolleys, using like game shows as well.
Yeah, game shows, and they're also just popping up in like popular culture. So there's Coldplayer are there to promote Zombade, which is a Band-Aid sort of thing, and then one is on Trisha because a woman says like I married a zombie or something.
Yeah, like I still love him.
Yeah.
Do you have sex with this guy? Did she say something like that?
And then we also, so we get to a point where Sean has basically won in the end, like his version of life, because Liz is now with him, and he says, "What do you want to do today?" And Liz kind of says, "Let's not really do anything. Let's just chill and eat and go to nip to the pub and that sort of thing." So he's essentially won the relationship.
Yeah, so she's obviously got like her outlook on life is different now that she's seen a possible end of the world scenario. So she thinks I'll probably add it good with Sean, and so now they're sort of embracing the the comforts of the simple life.
Yeah.
And then obviously Sean says, "I'm just going to pop out to the shed."
Yeah, where we see Nick Frost still playing a game, and they sort of play together. It's a nice little way to finish the film.
Yeah, Nick Frost. As a zombie, obviously. Yeah. Zombie Ed playing video games together. Do you reckon he's any good, though?
No, I can't imagine him being good.
Maybe that's why he likes it. He's like, I finally beat him. Beat his ass.
So, that's how the film ends. So, the trivia. You ready?
Yep.
Can you name all of the actors in Jessica Hines' party?
Martin Freeman.
Yep.
Matt Lucas.
Yep.
That woman from Green Wing. the guy from League of Gentlemen. Oh, God, what's his name? The guy from League of Gentlemen, and then, like, the old lady mum character. That was a really bad effort. I can't think of anyone's name. What's the guy's name? Oh, the guy's name from League of Gentlemen is...
Has he got it?
No, I can't remember.
You did pretty well. I thought you'd get...
Oh, Jessica Hines as well.
Yeah, I thought you'd get Reese Shearsmith's name.
Oh, Reese Shearsmith, yeah. Oh, it was close in my head.
The woman from Green Wing is called, and Black Books is called Tamsin Greig. She's in Friday Night Dinner as well. The woman I didn't think you'd get, which I wouldn't have remembered her name, is Julia Deakin, who plays Marsha in Spaced. She's the mum character on The Other Party.
Oh, right, okay, yeah.
She's also in Hot Fuzz. She's like the landlady in Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, yeah. She's in like, what's it called? Alan Partridge as well, isn't she?
Is she really? I never really watched much Alan Partridge. But okay, so number two, what was the original title for the film?
I feel like I know this as well. This is difficult. Was it... No, I've gone blank again.
The original title for the film was Tea Time of the Dead. Oh, that was what they had on the original pitching document.
Tea Time.
Yeah. It's not a very good title, is it? I'm pretty sure. Okay, number three. In the phone book, we see the reference to a very famous zombie movie director. Can you say who it is?
And George Romero? George A. Romero?
It's not George Romero. It's a different one. But it... I'll have another guess. I don't know if you know the director too much or not. I've never seen many of his films, but it's basically the fish restaurant is his name.
Oh, no, I can't remember that either.
No,
it's tough.
Yeah, sorry. It's Fulci's. Fulci's Fish Restaurant. Fulci did Zombie Flesh Eaters,
right.
Zombie 2, City of the Living Dead, like all these great other... the Italian sort of version of these films.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, number four. What game is Ed playing in the film on his PlayStation?
I was thinking that as well. Is it like Need for Speed or something like that?
No, it's a shooting game.
Is it a zombie shooting game? No. Crisis.
I think you mean Time Splitters 2.
Oh, right, okay. Is it Time Splitters 2, is it?
It is Time Splitters 2, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there are zombies in Time Splitters 2. Time Splitters 2, I thought it was a great game. I love that game. Yeah,
I haven't played that for years.
Yeah. Number five, I don't think you guessed. What is David, played by Dylan Moran's surname? What is David's surname? They never say it in the film. So unless you're looking at the credits.
David Black.
No, they could have gone something like that. David Fastidious, his name is.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Wow. That was tough. That was tough, Luke. What are you doing to me?
Well, I figured, Sean, that it's a film that we both know quite well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I watched so many extras. I watched so many extras as well, so I should have known a lot more, but still.
No, still did pretty well. Still did pretty well. This might be more difficult. You got like two of the people in the first one. What are you going to grade the film?
All right, okay. I've been thinking about this. So, as I said, it's not my favorite of, but I think Hot Fuzz is such a great film that it's really difficult to sort of put them together.
Yeah.
In terms of a film that does such, I mean, as sort of like horror comedy, I'd say it's probably my favorite horror comedy or comedy horror. I wouldn't say I preferred any of the Evil Dead films to this. I think this is the rewatchability in this is great. Like British comedy, especially British comedy of this era.
Yeah.
Really is my sort of humor as well, so it just kind of like ticks all the boxes for me, and I love zombie stuff. I know that this was originally sort of based off of an episode of Space where they did like a sort of
Resident Evil
bit where he kind of like falls asleep after being like drunk, and
he's been awake for like 48 hours on speed playing Resident Evil 2. Yeah. And they start seeing zombies everywhere. So that's,
I'd love to have seen more sort of like callbacks to old Resident Evil games, but still, like, it is a film. I wouldn't go as far to give it like an A+, but I'm definitely giving it an A.
Well, I was at like A+ level for so long, and I was just like, you know, I don't know. There's something that's making me having to bring it down to an A, because I do feel like I'm slightly, like, because this was a film that I loved so much in my early years, and I think I was just still holding it at that thing, that sort of level, even though it's probably not at that level. That's more of a nostalgic thing that's keeping it there.
But yeah, it's, I feel the same.
But it is, it's a definite A. Like, it's a fucking fantastic film. good.
Exactly. And it's the kind of film where, like, if I had to watch it again tomorrow, I quite happily would.
Yeah.
It's not the kind of film where I think, you know, a lot of the films on this list, you kind of think, I definitely don't need to see that for a few more years or ever again.
Yeah, yeah.
But there have been a few, and this is one of them where I'm a bit like, yeah.
Yeah. It's good to see that this film, like, did so well for Edgar Wright and Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, because it's like our brand, like English humour and English talent. Do you know what I mean? It's like our local boys doing well. So it is a great film, and I think I'm going to watch Hot Fuzz again soon. I think it's been like 3 or 4 years since I've seen Hot Fuzz.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I watched Hot Fuzz, obviously, as I said, but that wins out against this film only just, but still, yeah.
When I'm thinking about it now, I do feel like Hot Fuzz is more polished. Like, it just seems to have
more
the script seems more polished.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's the thing, is it's a few years after this. It's 3 years, isn't it?
Yeah.
So I know what you mean.
So next week, we could either I think we'd have to do Evil Dead 2 next, which is number 6 on the list. But I do want to do Hereditary when that comes out.
I think Hereditary is out on the 15th of June, so
right,
it might have to be the week after, maybe the week after that. But
okay, but that sounds exciting. A lot of buzz about that. Have you seen the trailer for Upgrade as well, by the way?
I haven't seen the trailer for Upgrade. When you mentioned it just now, I mean, I've seen the poster for it, but I haven't seen the trailer.
So it's Blumhouse. But it's not a horror. It's like a sci-fi horror thriller in the vein of RoboCop, Terminator, and that sort of thing. Apparently, like, it's really good, like a ton of fun for people who like those sort of films. It's like that modern equivalent of those. So I'm really looking forward to that. So maybe we should do that at some point. I don't know if it's horror enough.
Well, maybe we'll look into it a little bit. See, yeah, horror-y it is. That's not a word.
Horror-y. Okay, cool. So this show is brought to you by Hawk and Cleaver. Head over to hawkandcleaver.com. Become a patron over at patreon.com/hawkandcleaver. Thanks to Kovacs Kalman for our theme music. Thanks to Acast for hosting the show. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to you, everyone in the Facebook group. And thanks to my co-host Ben for being a real horror dude. Cheers, dude.
Thank you very much, Luke Condor. Until next time.
All right, man. I'm getting lost in the shadow here. All right, see you in a bit.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.